You've got to watch RuPaul's Drag Race, mate. Honestly, it's one of the best things on TV.
For the love of God, stop trying to make me watch that fucking TV show.
I'll tell you what.
Why do you love it so much?
I'll tell you what, mate. I'm going to pick you out.
Every fucking week, have you seen the RuPaul's Drag Race? What?
I'm going to pick you out the best episode and then you'll be stuck.
Yes, actually, that will happen. Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about
Leonardo DiCaprio,
Baz Luhrmann, Raspberry Pi, computer games, X-Files. And
have you got some letters to read out before we...
Yeah, Twitter's been kicking off, hasn't it? This has flown in all the way from across the pond. And it says, Dear Chris and Triss. It's a fun way of saying your name, isn't it? Dear Chris and Triss, now that the Avengers films have come and gone and the hype has all but died, do you regret allowing yourselves to get excited about a group of average films aimed at children on and off for over 10 years? Because I do, and that's from Joss Whedon. Pause for laughter. Thanks. Here's another one. Here's another one. Here's another one. And this one starts, Hi gang, just stop this person there. Technically, we're a pair, so I don't mind, but if you're going to be bandying around collective nouns, then get your maths right, mate. Hi, gang. First time caller, long time listener. Loving the show. My question is, now that the dust has settled on The Last Jedi and the new Solo spin-off film, do you regret allowing yourselves to get excited about a group of average films aimed at children on and off for the last 50 years? I do, and that's from an R. McCallum. And it says, P.S. will produce for food.
Every frame is so dense.
So dense. There's also a load of posts. There's a load of posts of Steven Spielberg, but it's barely worth looking at these days, mate. And that's all the letters this week.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Rick McCallum.
Hey, did you hear No Man's Sky is on an update? It's finally the game that we all thought it was when we spent £50 on it.
You mean Elite 2 Frontier? It's very close to Elite Dangerous. When I was looking at... Have you seen, like, some of the updates and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you basically just know that they've... It's basically a new game.
I own both of them.
Do you?
Elite and No Man's Sky.
Do you?
Yeah.
How do I not know that you own Elite Dangerous?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And why are you pulling that face? Is it because it's not as good as Skyrim?
It's a bit of a chore.
Is it not the same as when we used to play it on the Amiga?
No, it kind of is. But that was a chore as well, wasn't it? Because there's no... It needs a compelling narrative. Otherwise, it's just like a sandbox.
Yeah, he's just... Yeah.
It's really difficult to mine.
I never really did all the bounty hunting and shit like that because I was never good enough. No. I think I still only had the basic ship after years of playing.
I mean, I wasted about 3 hours just trying to, like, park up next to an asteroid and, like, mine something and, like, hoover it up. Do not bother. Like... I can't just qualify the shame I now feel looking back at that image of me.
But you own No Man's Sky as well, did you? But I take it, obviously you bought it when it was, when everyone was like, yay, and then they got it and they were like,
Yeah, did you? I fucking loved it, mate. But it quite quickly dawned on me that this wasn't the AAA game that Sony and the guy that made it, Sean Beardy Face, said it was, and that it was basically just an arcade game which gives you about an hour of fun, and then you've got to put it down because everything is on repeat. What I actually found out is that it's just one sandbox, like one level, repeated over and over again, like the background in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. It's like it tricks you into thinking that the universe is infinite, or at least massive, but all it is what happens is you like jump to the next planet along the chain or whatever, and then it just loads again and you come back into the frame from the left when you exited on the right into another small box with a couple of different random planets in it to create the sense of scale. And you, after 20 minutes, when you figure that out, after you've been prattling about on a planet doing nothing with these irritating like sound effects, you're like, oh, that's the game.
And that is the game.
That is the game.
And that is the game.
That is the game.
And the only aim of it was to explore, which sounds wicked on paper.
It sounds wicked, but when you're exploring one room over and over again, like, except every time you enter it, like, someone's changed the fucking wallpaper, that's not that much fun, is it?
So they've updated it and gone, it looks like it's a whole new fucking game.
Bear in mind what I just said, right?
Yeah.
So that hasn't changed, has it? So what's happened now is you're going to go into the same room so you can walk around with your mates and then go out again and come back in again and it's the same room again.
Isn't there plot now, though, as well?
Of course there's a fucking plot, mate.
There's plot and there's shootiness.
shooting us, yeah,
and attacking us.
It's like one of your favourite, you know, one of your favourite Star Trek episodes or something like that, isn't it? It's wonderful, rich in detail, and it's
rich in detail,
fantastic.
Alive in texture.
Exactly. Yes.
So, No Man's Sky has had a massive, massive update, which I didn't realise up until when I saw the advert today. Is also available on the Xbox, and I was like, oh, fuck, because oh, I almost want to buy it.
Is it available?
It is. It's available.
That was a Sony PS4
it was.
Exclusive, mate.
Not anymore. It's not. Not anymore.
There's nobody wants.
So that happened.
Okay. I might buy that update. Fuck it.
You have to buy the update.
Oh shit! Do you have to buy the update?
No, that's what I'm saying. You don't have to buy the update.
I'm not
surely.
Buying the update. No chance. I paid 50 quid for the original.
Exactly.
Fuck it out.
You own
made
the
money, Tristan. Get your own update.
Yeah. Battlefront 2's had the kind of update.
Yes,
but not to the bit that I really like, which is I like doing the star pilot multiplayer stuff.
Ooh.
And they've added one kind of level, which is you can do. It's a tournament between all the hero ships.
Right.
So you can choose like
Slave One, the Millennium Falcon,
yeah, etc. That's it.
There's the X Wing.
There's Kylo Ren's. There's Kylo Ren's ship. There's oh, yeah. There's Luke
the
Skywalker's X Wing.
Of course there is.
There's Poe Dameron's X Wing.
Yeah. That's four ships.
There's Yoda's ship. Yoda never had a ship.
But, yeah. Of course he had a ship. It was like a little egg.
No, not
like
his
Mork.
Not his Wookiee ejector seat.
Yeah, his little egg flying around in space.
By Chewbacca, that was totally unnecessary. So anyway, that's happened, so that's nice. And there was some solo stuff that's been added, and
oh yeah, solo stuff,
which is cool.
Have they put in two Landos? Original
yes,
Lando?
Have they? I think they have. I might have just made that up.
Okay.
I also want to.
What's Twitter saying these days, mate? Oh, no, that shouldn't have set up nothing.
That did nothing.
Don't set up nothing, Chris.
So I've had the joy of going back and watching X-Files from season one.
Fucking hell, man.
Because Mish has never seen it.
Right. And but you watched it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I watched it as we were growing up.
But I thought you tweeted that you'd never seen the Tombs episode.
No, that's the thing. There's some ones that I'd missed.
Yes.
Because I was watching on TV when it was being fucking broadcast, and we were like 12 or whatever. So
you were out shooting things, weren't you? Naughty
there's,
thing.
There's episodes that I missed, and Tombs was one of those episodes. Mm-hmm. And all the time we were building up to, because I also didn't realise he appeared in two episodes.
Does he?
Yeah, because he appears as Stretchy Man in like the second or third episode.
Does he?
Yeah, and he gets caught. And then the Tombs episode that everybody knows and loves is like episode 15 or something, where he comes up for parole.
Oh, right. I didn't know. That's... Oh, X-Files sounds good again.
Well, what I didn't get at the time is it was... There were lots of comparisons to Twin Peaks.
Were there?
Yeah.
Really?
But I always thought it was in terms of mystery.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen Twin Peaks.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Since then, like, I've seen Twin Peaks, and now I'm going back and watching it and thinking, do you know what it is? It's the fact that fucking hell, Mark Snow puts wall-to-wall music in X. There's much music in X-Files.
Is that?
It's fucking loads.
Is it proper shit budget as fuck music?
Oh,
as well,
it's
like?
So synthy.
Oh, yeah, synthy, yeah.
And don't get me wrong, there's quite a lot of times where it's fucking brilliant and it works and stuff like that, but I've now start seeing what the comparison was, and it's the because the music's
of course,
quite
like
similar
Twin Peaks
as well
with the music that's sort of like doom. Fucking hell, have you got to that one where they got all like self-referential and campy where it was like about Roswell, and then they were like the Men in Black came and
that's gold.
That's like, I imagine there's the same thing that happened in any long-running series where it runs. I mean, X-Files is famous for recycling the fuck out of its episodes, isn't it? That's when people got fed up, because it's like, holy shit, this is the sixth time we've seen... This is the sixth variation on that particular theme.
We haven't got that deep in yet.
Well, I'll get deep in you.
To notice. But, like, okay, so there's lots of things come up when people talk about X-Files, and the main one is people's either like or disdain for the conspiracy episodes. Because it works like this, doesn't it? It's either Monster of the Week,
yes,
or it's building on the mythology.
Yes.
And lots of people I know hated it whenever it started doing the conspiracy, but loved Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
What was your preference?
I need to rewatch it, because at the time I enjoyed all of it.
Mm.
I would like to rewatch it so I can just watch how they constructed that golden thread that must go through all of the seasons, which is about Duchovny figuring out, proving to everyone that he's been abducted, I mean, or something like that. Oh no, that's the much later.
It's his sister.
What's the golden thread?
The golden thread is about the alien colonization,
right?
Or so far, because I've never even seen all of X-Files, so yeah. I don't know where it ends up. Yeah. But it's that wonderful twist when you get to the movie, which is I think at the end of between seasons 4 and 5.
Is that all, really? I thought it was like season 8 or
no
something.
I thought it was earlier. It was much earlier than that. But in the movie you kind of get the twist that the men, like in that fucking dark room, who were the bad guys,
yeah,
are actually almost the good guys.
Yeah.
So what everything they've been doing has been about the fact that colonization is happening.
Yeah.
Like there's a timetable that's been set, and what they've been trying to do is they know that colonization will make the humans a slave race.
Yeah.
So everything they've been doing with alien DNA and all the hybrids and stuff like that has been about how basically to destroy the human race or render the human race useless to them before they're colonized. So they're kind of the good guys.
Yeah. That's how I colonize a planet.
But not.
Render the race useless and then just put myself through the door and say, I'm ready. Well, so fucking creepy, that, isn't it?
What door?
Right.
The space door?
Space door.
What are you ready for?
I'm ready for so much. So many things.
But there was a point, I can't remember which episode it was, when Mitch looked at me and she goes, Scully's a badass. And it dawned on me that, because I when I watched it, you know, we were quite young when we first started watching The X-Files.
Yeah.
And maybe not so much aware of, like, heroines and strong female characters or that. Or at least it's in front of you, but you're not necessarily analysing it.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Is she in what way?
Well, because she goes head-to-head with Mulder on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, either he gets dropped and she takes over, or vice versa. They're constantly rescuing each other.
Yes.
Yeah. Her opinion is valid in every situation.
Yeah.
Whether she's right or wrong. She fucking shoots so many guys.
Does she?
Yeah, she's... like, there's so many suspects that she just fucking shoots and stuff. Anyway, the point is she's feminine and strong and smart, and it's never... played. At no point is it like, hey, look what we're doing with this character.
Mm.
Like, not even to the point of, like, Sarah Connor, which before that was probably the strongest female lead. But there's a lot of times where you see
or
her
Ripley
where...
Ripley or something like that.
Oh, sorry, Ripley's... In fact, Ripley's the perfect example for comparison.
Yeah, okay.
Because
so
she's
an archetypal strong
Because she's not gung-ho in any way, is she? She's just dealing with the shit that's in front of her.
In, like, a mature way, rather than the Marines around her acting like children.
Yeah.
Shooting guns.
And at no point does she... Oh, she does get a kiss off, but there's nothing sexual about her getting
Naughty
a kiss
Ridley
off.
Naughty Ridley did that.
It's
he didn't
just...
need to do that, did he, Ridley?
Mm.
He knew what the fans wanted.
But
there weren't any fans. Where was the first one?
Yeah.
Sorry, fans.
Oh, it's creepy.
Space dolls.
Anyway, I'd never noticed that about Scully before. So it's been wicked.
So you were impressed by how well written she was?
Really impressed.
What's Scully's deal? So she's more than just a heel for Mulder's character, right? Is it well written enough that the two feel balanced? Or is it Mulder's story?
Where it starts getting strained is where you're like, look, oh, for fuck's sake, you've seen enough by now, Scully, to know that if Mulder thinks it's an elephant, that's actually an episode.
Is
it? If he thinks it's an invisible episode, if he thinks it's an invisible elephant, then, you know, it's probably an invisible elephant. Yeah. But there are one or two episodes that they did where Mulder puts two and two together and comes up with five.
Jesus.
And it's totally the wrong answer. And it's something complete. There were a couple of times where they use your knowledge of him against...
Yeah.
Your expectations of him against him. So you're sort of sitting there going, well, obviously it's an invisible elephant. And then it turns out it's not even remotely an invisible elephant at all.
All right, okay.
Which was really clever.
Is the Tombs one scary anymore?
Yes. That's the other thing I thought about when coming up to it. I was like, and my whole worry about it is, like, everybody that said it was wicked was 15 when they watched it.
Yeah.
He's actually got tears in his eyes.
So the
just do a local and chop it off.
Do a local.
So I was worried that it wouldn't be scary at all, and there's lots of there's bits in the X-Files where you look at the effects and you're like, because it was before the golden age of TV. But there's other stuff that's been done. I look at it and wonder whether did this come from budget? And that's why it's so good.
From adversity.
Yeah. For example, in this scene, we'll just use a really bright light and that'll symbolize, that'll be the aliens coming. But that works, and it had an aesthetic that you'd not seen before. But there was a bit where you could see this alien spaceship rising, and it was through a frosted window.
Yeah.
It was in, I think it was the episode Paperclip.
Yeah.
And you could...
Like practical effect or CGI?
Well, I couldn't tell.
Brilliant.
It would definitely have been practical for this.
Yeah.
And it's coming through the frosted windows of this warehouse, and I turned to Mish and I said, the wicked thing about this show is they never did shitty CGI and stuff like that when they could do it for real, and then it cut to outside and this shit no sooner the words tumbled out of my mouth than the shittiest CGI fucking thing flew over the top, and I was like, yeah, ignore the fact I said that. But there's other stuff where the effect, the film craft is around like not having the money to do stuff. It's like, okay, well, what can we do? And it's that whole Jaws thing. The suspense really supported the show.
Yeah, what sticks in my mind is like them like coming into like haunted house style moments, or like an old barn or whatever. That's the shit that used to freak me out watching that when I was younger. But why is the Tombs one so scary, mate?
It's partly the character, physically the look of the character. Because it's this guy, he looks like Brad Dorf but isn't. I wish I could remember what his name is.
It's Brad Dorf.
He's only ever played creepy motherfuckers.
Yeah, okay.
You order him. But also, like, the way they do his stretching effect is kind of unusual. And
is it legit? Does it look good?
Yeah.
Right. So it's not like still looks blurry CGI.
But the thing is, what's funny is you're looking at it and you're like, I know how they did that. It's so obvious how they did that.
Yeah.
But it comes together. It's put together so well. You kind of give it a pass.
So what happens in that episode?
He has to eat something like 5 livers, and then he goes into hibernation for 30 years. He's like on a 30-year cycle.
Right.
And he's got one more to eat.
Yeah.
And Mulder goes on a rant. It flashes back to his hearing where Mulder's trying to put him away. And Mulder goes
For being like a stretchy monster man.
For being a stretchy monster. Well, nobody believes that.
Of course they don't. Look at him.
And so Mulder completely discredits himself. But it's about every time he goes to hunt somebody down, Mulder comically steps in to like stop him. It's really well done. Yeah.
Just following him around.
Yeah. Mulder's basically he's just following him around like a shadow to not let him commit any crime.
Is that the episode then? Like Mulder like hunting down Tombs.
To a point, yeah.
Where's Scully?
It's been nice revisiting episodes, and like you kind of start watching when you think, oh, I think I've... You know, when you get that twinge of remembering.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then loads of it. Like, I was sitting there repeating dialogue from shows I haven't seen for 15 years. I was like, oh my God.
It's still in there.
Why couldn't have I been interested in physics?
Exactly.
Or done something with my life. One episode, that was another thing. Seeing the cameo, well, not cameos, but people before they were famous.
Oh, shit.
One fucking episode, right, has Jack Black and Giovanni Ribisi in the same fucking episode.
What?
I couldn't believe it.
What the fuck? Playing what?
Playing these two dudes who hang out in an arcade and one of them can summon lightning.
Oh, what? As in, like monsters and stuff? Are they, like, proper bad guys? Or
what? Giovanni Ribisi's
like
the bad guy.
I think I remember Ribisi being in it.
He was great,
was
in it as well.
Yeah.
Black was like, bleh, 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 like kind of what he normally is.
Yeah, Jack Black.
Ribisi was well fucking creepy.
Well, I wouldn't mind going back and watching the X-Files again, mate.
It's on Prime.
What?
It's on Prime.
Do
you not have Prime anymore?
Right, I don't want to go and watch it again. Fine. You're happy now. You're happy. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Did you or did you not watch Final Space?
I did see the pilot.
On YouTube?
Yes, on YouTube.
But you've got Netflix.
Yeah, I do have Netflix, yeah. Well, you should have told me that it's on Netflix.
When have I ever suggested anything that isn't on Netflix?
Oh, that's just a good point. Hey, it was all right, I thought. Was it all right? Yeah. I don't think that was the real episode, though. It's just a pilot. It's totally different. No, I watched a pilot. Fucking hell, I sound like Grandpa fucking Simpson.
Was it on the iTunes?
No, so anyway, we had to tie onions to our belts because it was the style at the time. I watched a fucking pilot on YouTube, and it was totally fucking different to the first actual episode, which I also watched on YouTube. That's how pilots work, actually. Just saying, and I've said that out loud, I feel like a right dick.
Oh, shit, no, we've got to go back to
the pilot. The pilot starts with a cat dead in his arms.
What?
Yeah.
He doesn't die for ages.
That's how it starts.
That's bizarre.
It's like everything's dying around him.
Yeah.
And it's, there's a countdown.
That's mental.
On the computer.
Yeah.
And he's flashing back to, like, okay, further and further back for, yeah, to explain what's happening.
Oh, shit, that sounds mental. Yeah, it's nothing like
it
that.
It was quite good.
Wicked. It's got that thing
needle
that I hate in cartoons where everybody's really shouting, yeah, for absolutely no reason. Yeah. And I put it on, and then I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I woke up on about episode 4, because they're only short. They're only about 20 minutes each. And I woke up on episode 4. I was like, no, because I fell asleep. I was like, ah, this isn't really that good, is it? Woke up on episode 4. It's like, fucking hell, this is, what's happened? This is mint. So I had to go back. And if I didn't know that it got better,
yeah,
I wouldn't have forced my way through episode 1, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love the fact that it's short. I love that it gets surprisingly dark in places.
Yeah, okay.
As well, which...
Like, what, can you give an example of that?
Like, when that cat died. That is dark.
That is dark, actually.
That's very dark.
What I'm waiting for is, like, for you to send me the perfect episode, and then I'll fucking watch it.
Okay,
right?
I'll do that.
Remember, like, the Pickle Rick episode?
I'll do it.
I want,
I've
that.
Got it.
Excellent.
Well, what also is there some blatant... I mean, the whole thing, the plot line of it is basically All Good Things from Star, which is the final Star Trek Next Generation episode. And it's so obviously that it's unreal. There's a rift in space that's being caused in more than one time period.
Yeah.
And they've got to seal it in the different time periods. So, like, fucking out. And then there's other obvious nods to Red Dwarf.
There's not.
Yes, there is.
There's not.
The droid that's meant to keep him sane, Kevin, while he's
like
in
Crichton.
Prison. Well, it'd be Rimmer, technically, because Rimmer was brought back to keep Lister sane, supposedly.
Oh, really?
But that's what... So you've got Kevin. Warhammer 40,000, which is one of the characters, just has a helmet that looks so fucking like a Space Marine, it's unreal. There's a massive nod to Armageddon at one point.
Is there?
Yeah.
Is there? What, with the little bubble thing?
The little... No. It's with the sealing somebody off. Like, oh, yeah, let's go and do this thing. And then sealing them in the airlock so they can't get out. Dad, I need red
man. Oh, fuck, you know.
But it's just so blatant, and the soundtrack's wicked.
Right.
And I've really enjoyed that. So it's from... Most of it's from an artist called Shelby Merry,
yeah,
who I've now bought, like, loads of a back catalogue. Buy it.
Okay.
Right. And there's other voices that include David Keith, who's also in Rick and Morty,
yep,
the American president. Peter Kenny, who's the ship, which confused the crap out of me for ages, because he does loads of audiobooks.
Does he?
And I was like, for ages, I couldn't pin the, like, the,
yeah, yeah,
the,
yeah,
voice,
yeah,
down.
I know, I mean, you can hear it. Who's he? What audiobooks has he done?
He did The Player of Games, which is one of my favourite Ian M. Banks books.
Oh, really? Fucking hell, but that was long.
They all are.
Fucking hell, they are, aren't they?
I love Ian M. Banks. Voices include David Keith, Peter Kenny, and Chinman himself, Ron Perlman.
Perlman. Does he play the cat?
He plays the dad.
The dad? Who, is David Tennant in it?
Who's Fuck,
he?
I forgot David Tennant.
Who's David Tennant play?
David Tennant's the bad guy. The Lord Commander. Going back to games, I have
Shit,
to tell
actually,
you.
Shit, actually,
I have to tell you. About the Raspberry Pi. So for Mish's birthday, I bought her a Raspberry Pi, which is loaded with emulation software.
Sweet.
And it emulates consoles up to the N64 and PS1 from the dawn of time.
Yeah.
So it's got about 35,000 ROMs preloaded. It's amazing.
Yep.
And productivity in our house has fallen in direct proportion to the amount of games that we have.
What were you producing? What were you up to?
Exactly.
What do you mean productivity has fallen?
I mean,
just like knitting sweaters. Like just putting Nike trainers together, flocking them. What?
Baking all the bread that we've been doing.
Yeah, that's right.
The bread we've been making out of my toenail clippings. It's all gone.
Exactly.
It's all gone.
Fucking through the floor.
It's literally like, don't even say hello now when Mish comes in. We just sit down, grunt at each other, and fire up the next game of Shuffleput Cafe on the Amiga 500.
What were the... Tell me immediately the first three games you played on that fucker.
Cannon Fodder.
Oh, really?
That's how I went straight to Cannon Fodder.
Amazing.
Like, yes.
What a game.
Mario Kart 64.
Yes.
And Shadow Dancer, Revenge of Shinobi.
Shinobi?
Yeah.
Was it actually Shinobi? Was it the knockoff one? The where he's in white? Was it Shadow Dancer?
It was Shadow Dancer. So
which is not Shinobi. Is that was the worst
that
one.
Confused me. But I like the dog. Having the dog's wicked.
Yeah, that's right. I had a dog, but it was a shitter game than Shinobi, which was more legit.
That explains why I've nearly finished it already.
Yes. Shinobi was fucking nails.
So they've got Shinobi as well. But yeah. they're the first three I think I played.
Right.
It's just wonderful.
Why didn't you play Donkey Kong, Pac-Man and Mario? Why didn't you play those three?
I played Wipeout.
Did you?
I played Wipeout.
Oh, that is a fucking dog of a game.
No, I'm
so... It's awful,
I love
mate.
Wipeout so
fucking
much.
Fucking terrible.
No.
What, like these little sleds that bang off walls and it's awful.
No, it's only awful.
I used
awful.
To hate playing
that game. That's because it's so obnoxiously difficult.
Ugh. Terrible game. So, you can't hit the sides. So, why can't you hit the sides?
So, when I got the PS...
I'm driving a fucking box like in a fucking ice rink.
Through treacle.
Listen to fucking techno by the Prodigy.
So I've told this story 100 times, I think, but when we went to uni, we got the PS2 and bought that latest version of Wipeout.
Yeah.
And for about 4 years, this is including after uni, we'd finished, Craig would just sit there, like rage quitting, swearing, sweat dripping down his face.
Horrible
as he
game.
Just tried gruelingly to complete it. And eventually, after years of frustration, he did. And it was only then that we realised that you could buy upgrades for your ship.
Oh, fucking hell.
He smashed through that game with the basic, most boring, low-power chip.
Serious?
I looked at the bank. We had millions, absolutely millions. You could have bought any ship. Lasers.
Fucking hell, mate.
Everything.
Oh, that makes me feel, like, physically sick. Thinking of, it's like playing that fucking Trials game. You know, when you're on a little trial bike. It's like, restart, 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 fucking hell. I hate computer games so much, but I bloody love them.
Well, I was thinking we should do a wicked episode where I come round to yours or you come round to mine and just let you have free reign. Like, oh, let's play this and then see what chat
it
generates.
Yeah, episode of what? In the box this week is Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And anything that you've seen between now and the last time we were on air.
Oh, God. The way they're writing Mission Impossible at the moment is a joke, right?
What?
Wait for it. Because what they've done for the last 3 Mission Impossibles now. Because this is Mission Impossible 6, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is Mission Impossible 6, right? Okay. They start shooting with a script that they know is shit.
By Christopher McQuarrie.
No. Chris McQuarrie's not in there yet.
Got it.
They start off with a script that they know is shit. And then they call, and they're already shooting, and about halfway through, they say, this script's shit,
yes.
Get McQuarrie to fix it.
Yes.
So what McQuarrie does then is he looks at the broken script, looks at the pieces they've already shot,
yes.
And thinks, how can I make this plot work with what they've already... A new plot work
yes.
with what they've already filmed.
That are you fucking serious?
No, I'm not. Yes,
are
I am
serious.
Are
you fucking joking?
That is a shit way of making films.
That's a fucking joke.
That is a shit way of making movies. Right? And if you're going to do that 3 times, why not just get McQuarrie to write the script in the first place?
And direct it, which he did with Mission Impossible, Fallout.
And has he got himself out of director's jail for making Way of the Gun?
Fuck off. Halfway the gun's classmate.
This is where the divide is.
Okay,
he says that film splits the room. This is where the
did
divide
is. Did not
starts.
Expect that low blow from you, Kristen O'Phill. You fucking love that film.
What a crock of shit.
No, don't say that. That's not fair. I've got literally nothing to support the fact that I think it's good, apart from I liked it when I saw it.
He describes that film as doing this. That film is literally sticking a finger up at the audience, which he did on purpose.
Did
because
he?
Everyone wanted him to... He said everybody wanted him to do another...
Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
keep doing that. That's what people want. They say they want it. Fucking hell.
So he goes, well, I'm going to make you a film about criminals. He goes, I'm going to give you what you asked for, not what you want.
Yeah.
And it's kind of basically stuck your fingers up at your expectations. He said, and you know it's bad, because when you walk out of a good film, everyone's like, hey, how you doing? Da-da-da. This is great. And if you walk out of a bad film, you've got like a 10-meter radius all around you.
Jesus, I can't imagine how bad that feels. Ugh.
Yeah.
Why do people give it a hard time when it's amazing?
So there's that. My question is, how can it possibly be better than Mission Impossible 3, which is fantastic? fantastic.
Oh, here we go. You love Mission Impossible I 3, do, mate.
I love Mission Impossible 3.
Just because it's got jabrams all over it.
Because one's awful. Oh, Martin, listen to me. One is awful.
No, well, fuck. Never mind, Martin. What about me?
The only
mate,
thing
Brian
about,
De Palma.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is in it.
Really?
Yeah.
QT.
Ving Rhames makes a guest appearance.
The only good thing about that film is
maybe Jean Reno, or is that...
Oh, kill Emilio Estefez in the first 5 minutes.
Does that happen?
Yeah, he gets crushed in the lift thing, doesn't he?
I can't... Oh, fuck yes! I really want to watch... So
it's the, really not good.
So the overriding feeling that I came out of Mission Impossible yes. 6...
Were you like, this was, film was broken and McQuarrie fixed it?
No, I was like, oh, I wouldn't mind watching a proper film by Brian De Palma. Remember that bit with the fish tank?
That's the only bit. There's that and the helicopter.
The music comes on. Ding, 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 ding. You two did the music. What a time to be alive.
What was it like?
It's got like a 4-star first act and a 5-star final act. And the middle is a waste of fucking time. Hence, do the maths. Give the middle 1 star. 3 stars. Fucking calculate that shit, mate. What's 5 + 4 + 1 / 3? Because it's 3 acts. Fucking 3 stars. Why is it getting 5-star reviews from everywhere? Like, Empire gave it 5 stars. Everyone on the street's giving it 5 stars. I was livid, mate.
Is it the Avengers?
Oh,
it's the Avengers, but worse with Tom Cruise.
Do you know what? This is fucking hoodwinking.
Is this the one where he's strapped to the side of the aeroplane, or is this the one where he jumps? This is the Halo jump. The last one was where he was strapped to the
What's
side of the
Halo?
Aeroplane.
What's a Halo?
Halo jump is where you jump out of an aeroplane, free fall, and don't pull your ripcord till the last fucking second.
No, that's a stunt, mate. He would have told everyone he did it.
But he strapped himself to the side of the plane.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, like in a studio with a fan in front of a fucking couple of fans. This guy's bollocks, mate. This is like how it's tricked people into saying it's a 5-star film. Because it's a 5-star final act, right? That bit is legit. But people leave the cinema and say, oh, that was a fucking good film, wasn't it? Oh, brilliant. Like, they forget, like, the 60-minute middle act where you're just like, oh, my fucking Christ, I need a piss. I shouldn't have had those 2 bottles of beer. Could I legitimately leave the theatre and then get a pizza and then see the rest another time? It fucking drags its feet so badly, mate. I'm like, I was thinking, I don't think I can cope. I think I need to leave because this is boring.
Is Henry Cavill in this
Henry
one?
Cavill is terrible in this film. He is fucking awful, mate. Bless him. He's really trying hard to act. I've never seen him in anything other than Superman. Has he even been in anything other than Superman? No. Has he had to act yet?
Not really. No, he was in Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was awful.
He was trying to act in this. And bless him, it wasn't. It's not happening. He's massive, though.
The Rock's massive.
Yeah, The Rock is massive, isn't he? Cavill didn't work in this. The best part about this film was an amazing scene at the very end after Tom Cruise has saved the fucking day and he's in, like, this hospital bed, and then the love interest comes up to him and she's like... He says to her, I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry for putting us all through this. And she says to him, like, no... I've just realised that it's me who should be sorry. We love you and we need you. And then, like, goes on for 5 minutes about how important Tom Cruise is and the Mission Impossible team. And he's just sat there, like, going, yep, yeah, that's it. And it was like, fucking hell, where's this come from? This is legitimately awful. Hey, the Impossible Mission bit was good, though. See, I liked that bit.
This is why 3 is good, because 3 is relentlessly entertaining from start to finish.
So is this one.
So
is this one, mate.
You just said the middle act was awful.
It is terrible, mate. It's so bad. It's like, what the fuck are we all doing? Turn the light on. I swear, someone turned the lights on, and everyone looked around, and we, like, each of us in the cinema, like, blank stares, just looked at each other and then the lights went off again, and then we sunk back into our seats, and then I think the film carried on. But there was definitely a moment when the lights came on and everyone looked at each other and said, what is going on? Nothing's happening of any consequence whatsoever before the lights went off and the film restarted. I've never seen that happen before, mate, in a cinema. Have you? Have you ever, apart from when we saw Batman and Robin, and the lights came on, and everyone went, no! What? Keep playing it. Shit, we need to see what happens. Mr. Freeze is coming on.
The light came on in the middle of Batman and Robin.
We had to go and get your
mum.
We
left the cinema.
We've already told this story. We've told this story before.
It's an integral part of our history, Chris. Right, speaking of The Rock.
Yes.
Speaking of The Rock.
Yeah.
Right, The Rock says
Rock's
that,
big these
Rock
days.
Says that by the time I get out of bed, he's already been to the gym twice. By the time he's been to the gym twice, before I even get out of bed, I've had two wanks, so I'm way ahead.
Yeah.
I before I even contemplate getting out of bed, I've fired off twice.
Jesus Christ. Well, so what? So,
so I think I'm winning.
So what, does he get up at like 5 a.m. and then
goes to the gym, to then the has gym, breakfast, then goes to the gym
by
again.
About, and then by about 8 minutes past five, he's done. So that's my Mission Impossible 6 Fallout review. 3 stars, obviously. That's a fucking given. 3-star masterclass. It's a masterclass in 3-star filmmaking. Treat the audience like idiots and end on a high and they will go out singing its praises. I mean, that's been true since Hollywood fucking started.
I was going to say, tell us something they don't know.
We'll pull him out of the curtain too much there, am I?
Every screenwriting book you look at, it says you'll be judged by your... Any studio executive will judge you by your first 10 pages and your last 15.
Exactly, yeah.
And not give a shit about the middle.
Do you know what, though? I was really excited. At the start of it, I was like, this is class. The music came on. You got the title credits, which ruined the film by showing all the spoilers that happened all the way through the film as well.
Oh, that's shit.
Yeah, it was awful. And but the music was great. It was Mission Impossible theme tune. And then we had like a little James Bond set piecey thing or whatever. And then it ended all right. Really, I was upset.
So while I was by the pool, and I knew you were going to be upset. When I was by the pool, I was scrolling through my iPod. I've still got my old classic iPod because I like the clicky wheel.
No, you don't.
Yes,
no,
I fucking
do. No, you're just
do.
Saying that.
Yes, I do.
You do
yes,
not,
I
mate.
Do.
You can't
well, no,
charge
I don't
it.
It or I don't
you
like
don't have it. You can't charge it. It's dead. It died a long time ago. You're bullshit.
Didn't. I love it. I was scrolling through artists and it came to... I was scrolling through artists because I don't know album names or music stuff and it came to Craig Armstrong. I was like, ooh. Romeo and Juliet soundtrack.
Ah.
Interesting.
Yes.
Because it was one of those weird soundtracks where they put in dialogue into the soundtrack, which I thought was wicked.
From the movie.
From the movie.
Yes.
Because some bright cookie at the studio realised that it's, as you know, it's Shakespeare, so it's about the fucking dialogue.
Yeah.
As much as it could be about anything. Anything else on top of the dialogue is ancillary. And it made me remember that you're going to the secret cinema for Romeo and Juliet, which I thought was going to be awful. And I said, no, I don't want to go with you.
Yes,
and then when I started
fucking
listening,
remember you saying that because I invited you.
Yeah, and I said, fuck off, that's going to be awful.
Why
I
did
never,
you say that, mate?
Because I kept getting stuck on a loop of when Mercutio is doing that stupid thing. When
that's all you can see.
And I thought, I it's just going to be that for 4 hours.
I imagine that when you die and you're being cremated, I want to see that above your ashes, like in the funeral parlour, in like neon. Like, I want to see
young
that.
Heart,
yeah, exactly. That's how I want you to die.
So that's why I said no, because I can't, my brain can't get off. It's like a washing machine of that just happening.
Yeah, there, but he's quite sexy.
With that huge fucking wig on.
Yeah, but I would.
Anyway, I was listening to the soundtrack and it made me remember the film. We were at school when it came out, and I started thinking to myself, fuck me, is that film actually, is it a masterpiece? Because it's fucking bold. Like, there's what you can say what you like about it, but the film is bold.
It is, yeah.
The visual style is like being assaulted
with campness.
It's, yeah, it's very
camp. It's Christmas, mate.
But what it did was introduce Shakespeare to a young audience or to a new audience.
Yeah.
That perhaps, you know, because there'd be people who only went to see that for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Me.
Yeah, excellent. So nice. But there would, you know, there have been people who just went to see it for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, and there were some girls in it or something. I don't know, I wasn't paying attention.
And people who went maybe because they were studying it at school and they'd seen that 60s, the Zeffirelli version, where you see a little bit of side boob and
you
got excited. I think there was a little bit of nipple.
He cast, for the first time, young protagonists as Romeo and Juliet, like 16-year-old actors, rather than before that, it was all like people in Hollywood in their 30s pretending to be teenagers. So you've got to give him some credit, mate.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to take any credit away from it, but I remember watching it and kind of getting it, giggling at the side boob. And
What's he giggling at the side
boob? A bit of side boob. I wouldn't have minded so much, but the teacher preempted it by saying, now, look, there's a bit of breast in it, you know, don't get all... Blah, blah. Yeah. And then, of course, we did.
Erupted
it made it
in
doubly
unison.
Funny. But it made me more interested in Shakespeare, and it made me... like, I remember watching the first part of it and thinking... I don't quite understand what's being said right now. And then your brain clicks at one point and you start understanding the rhythm and the language and stuff like that. Is it a masterpiece or am I remembering it wrong?
No, it is a fucking masterpiece.
Because I question myself again, because at uni, it was the academics, they're despised that film.
Right, so hold on. You frame this because you went to acting school. So those tutors were fucking legit, weren't they? And that's one of the most legit acting schools in the UK, right? So the guys teaching you must know their shit, right?
Yeah.
What, and they hated it?
Fucking hated it, and me for liking it. They had that snotty thing of like, Americans can't do Shakespeare. But Americans have kind of adopted that stigma as well. They have a fear of Shakespeare that they can't do it. And that's echoed in... there's a brilliant documentary that's done by Al Pacino called Looking for Richard.
Right, what's
that about? He's getting a group of actors together to actually do Richard III.
Yes.
Their fear about doing Shakespeare is articulated in that documentary.
Is it?
And it's even got like fucking... it's got like this interview with Sir John Gielgud about Americans doing Shakespeare. And
yeah, he bet he hates it. That's a bit fucking snooty as fuck, though, isn't it? Like the Brits.
Of course they can't
do bloody Shakespeare.
Listening to the dialogue, which is all I could do
in Roman Juliet.
Yeah, yeah, but listening on the soundtrack, just because all you've got is the little snippets of dialogue, I was thinking, this is fucking... they understand what they're saying. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
And I can still see the visuals are still imprinted in my head, and you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's crying shouty face.
Yes, exactly. Do the cry face, do the shouty face, do them both together. This guy.
The Postlethwaite opens it.
Yes, he does. Mate, so my lasting memory of Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet
is at my house.
Is at your house in the summer. And you put it on for me because I hadn't seen it, I don't think. I don't remember seeing it at the cinema.
No.
And so yet again, I had to rely on you to show me something good. So I begrudgingly went round your house. You were like, this is going to blow your mind. And then you did that thing that you always do and still do, which is when you're really excited about something and you show it to someone, you immediately turn to them and watch their reaction while the movie plays and just laser focus on my face. So I'm sat there kind of like going, okay, the film started. Tristan started looking at me again and and then boom, and it was like that fucking montage at the beginning was first class. And then from there, when it cuts into and the music starts and then you see the fucking Cadillacs or whatever in Verona Beach, then you're fucking in. That is a masterclass in grabbing the audience's attention and fucking focusing them on act one and the narrative and what happens next.
That was like, for all you 15-year-olds,
it was
almost like Michael Bay before Michael Bay happened.
The ultimate Bay.
You said something which has always stuck with me, and I think I've said this about 12 million times. I even said it to Em as well when we were first chatting about film and shit like that. Which is when they're getting ready for the party, there's an awful lot of fast forward, and you went, Christ, the director's in a hurry to get to the good stuff. Yeah. And I thought that was really fucking... it's like, yeah, these details are good, they're important, but let's not dwell on them. Let's get to the meat of the fucking... because there's... if you look at the Zeffirelli version, I mean, you forget the displaced time periods and stuff like that. Yep. He uses a lot of the script.
Yeah.
I mean, even with any discussion about whenever to do a Shakespeare play, there's always an element of... it starts with what's your take on it, and then the next element, guaranteed, if we're going to Vegas, I'll put 90% of my shit on this, is, okay, and what are we cutting? That's the next part of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. My point was that Baz Luhrmann, as a filmmaker, has a perfect understanding of how to create a fucking mood and a certain tone that resonates with the audience, which does not rely on dialogue.
There's nothing subtle about Baz Luhrmann's filmmaking.
There are like changes in tone to something like pace, tone, pitch, harmony, like light, shade. He's all over all of that, and he knows how to ramp up an audience's like fucking interest in it's like a scene or an act and stuff like that. And then he knows that he needs to dial it down again afterwards. And it's in all of his films. You get a moment when he pulls out of the, literally pulls out of the scene, like in Moulin Rouge, above the skyline, almost above Paris. And then you get a vignette of something much quieter, and maybe like a lone, like, was it the moon? Like fucking Pavarotti moon or something like that? He's a master storyteller when it comes to creating mood, tone, and that kind of feeling. He doesn't rely on dialogue. When confronted with a Shakespeare play and a guy that relies on tone and mood rather than dialogue, then you got a fucking fascinating piece of narrative where he knows that the dialogue has to punctuate what he's trying to show people, so he has to pick and choose which bits of dialogue that he wants the audience to care about. And you get these wonderful vignettes throughout the film that really resonate and are really memorable, like the fish tank scene where Tom Cruise is sat in front of it. Yeah, and then like the fucking
Claire Danes lead to have to
and then the Mission Impossible music together? Yes, we can. Can we cut let's those cut those fucking scenes together?
Tom Cruise is having his clandestine meeting. Yeah. And then suddenly from the streets
hello,
Claire Danes looks through the fish tank.
Fucking Mercutio. It's Young Hearts. Well,
because that was when DiCaprio was at the height of his lead is kind of period as well, wasn't it? Because after this, he did
what? After
because after that, he did like the beach, didn't he?
Yes, he did. It went grape, average, Juliet, big, vanish, beach.
No, because he
dad
did.
Bod. He did. Done. He was in one of the Star Wars prequels. Wasn't he Anakin Skywalker? He was, wasn't he?
Okay.
So, Baz Luhrmann, what about him as a filmmaker then?
Well, what have you got?
I think he's a bit too much.
Well, you know, I think he has a style.
Does he?
He has something.
Boisterous, isn't he?
He has something he wants to say. It's generally.
Why have you got camp?
That's my point.
Oh, I know why.
He's got something that he wants to say, and generally it's quite loud and it's quite camp.
Yes.
It's very in your face. It's all over your face.
His films can be camp. I mean, it's pretty much, you know what you're getting with a Baz Luhrmann film. He's pretty one note. Well,
you're going to feel like a beef. See, that's what you're saying. You're talking about him crafting kind of drops and subtlety and creating breathable moments. I think that's basically, there comes a point where you just can't take it any higher.
That is
like,
true as well.
Physically can't maintain it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's fundamentally aware that that's what he's doing to an audience.
He's got one level and it's on and that's it.
No, he does. Yeah, no, he does. There's huge variety in like tone and pace and everything like that. Yeah, he's a musician as much as a filmmaker. That was really profound what I just said then. Genuinely good. He's always on the fourth can as well.
That's where the magic happens.
It is, yeah, it is. Prang!
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, Graham, thank you for being there.
Oh, and there's a tension, and bing!
There's not really enough room for me to get a local in.
So, I'm going to see Secret Cinema, so that should be fun.
Until you get to the staircase, Young Hearts!
There's going to be like 100 people dressed
when
like
that bit happens,
your actual
when
nightmare.
When that bit happens, you're going to piss yourself laughing.
Why want you to go? You can still go, there's still time.
Oh, it's been 400 quid. Well, tell 400 me the tiers.
Quid,
tell me
mate.
The tiers.
I think it's just like 40 quid and then something that you wouldn't pay anyway. All the good shit is on the cheap tickets. So they are clever. They know that real cinema lovers like get the best ride for paying like that kind of money. The people that don't like films, who are spending 80 quid a ticket to be in, to be treated like royalty, miss out on the actual narrative that the organisers have spent a lot of time and energy preparing.
So is it just split into Montagues and Capulets or...
Fucking too right, mate. I'm a Capulet. Legit, I've got to buy a Hawaiian shirt.
Amazing.
I fucking know.
Amazing.
I used to love Hawaiian shirts, if you remember.
I do. But if you rewind it, did you love them because of Romeo and Juliet?
Oh my fucking God. Yes, I did. Wow, that was a profound influence on my wardrobe.
What are you hoping What
oh my god!
Hoping?
I'm hoping. Oh my god! I'm hoping for so much. Will it live up to my expectations? Probably not, but let's find out. I hope for the biggest ballroom I have ever seen in my life, and a fully recreated Verona Beach with all those funny cars and funny swords and guns. Too much?
A little bit. Too much.
Unbroadcastable?
I don't know about that.
Okay, so I'm hoping for that.
Okay.
I wonder how they'll recreate... I'll be looking out for the DiCaprio and the Claire Danes characters, because I think that'd be quite sweet. I think they'll do a little moment with
the fish tank.
With the fish tank, which will... I mean, it'll look ridiculous in real life. But fuck it, I'm up for that.
They'll do the church. That could look spectacular.
Do you know what was actually... What I loved, actually... was they started a bit of they did a bit of outdoor marketing for it. So where I work in Farringdon in London, and the train station there, they had posters outside it. Okay, so the setup is the ceasefire between Father Lawrence, who I imagine is the Postlethwaite, has managed to create ceasefire for one evening between the two houses, and therefore everyone's having a fucking party. So that's the setup for the secret cinema gig. So you choose your alliance by filling in some random shit, and it tells you whether you're a Montague or you're a Capulet, and you choose which kind of gang, gives you a couple of gangs, and it tells you who's in charge of them. Like, you only know two names, Tybalt and Mercutio, whatever, and the rest are just like, I don't know, probably from the play. So this has got this like outdoor ad campaign. So the false advertising posters are from the Verona Tribute, like the newspaper, and it says Father Lawrence declares ceasefire no longer a dream. But I lap that shit up, mate. You know what I'm like with hype. So I'm so up for this. It's going to be good. Imagine this: me in a fucking Hawaiian shirt with a nailed on centre parting, fucking loving it. For 3 hours straight, load of fake sand, maybe even be real sand, and then I get to watch the film as well with Emma.
It's gonna be wicked. I think you're gonna really enjoy it. I'm looking forward to hearing like next time when you report back. Okay, so what's Baz Luhrmann's best film then out of the three that we can think of straight away? So
Gallipoli,
he didn't do Gallipoli.
The Departed, and Alien 2. Romeo and Juliet. Like, he's not gonna get better than that. It's too good. I totally get people that say they hate Baz Luhrmann. Because of that, like, assault on the senses. That's his shtick. Like, he wants you to be assault. He wants to assault your senses. And he knows how to do that better than most filmmakers. Right, how the fuck are we going to wrap up this episode?
That's what I've been thinking for the last 10 minutes.
That's not a question for you, Tristan. That's a question for our listeners. Hey, guys, how are we going to finish this?
So if you're still listening to us at the end of this, thank you very much. Get on Twitter, at BoxFreshFilms, and tell us what you prefer out of Romeo and Juliet or The Departed.